Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey guys, what we're doing on tonight's show is listening to the most recent edition of Metal Raps. This was recorded last Sunday, September 11th, 2016. It features myself, I am Mark Striegel, along with my two buddies, Mitch Joel and Mitch LaFon. And you know the drill. We talk for, 15 to 30 minutes. This one's more on the 30-minute side. So check it out and enjoy it. And give us a like on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Here you go.
Well, hey there, and welcome to episode number 33 of Metal Raps. My name is Mitch Joel, and as always, I am joined by Talking Metal's Mark Striegel. Mark, how's it going?
Good, Mitch. How are you?
Great. And of course, we are also with the other Mitch, the one-on-one with Mitch LaFon, Mitch LaFon.
Good day. Good day. Always a pleasure to do these. 33. Who knew we'd get this far?
And here we are, which is exciting. So I think I was the most metal concert attending person in the group last week. I was in Cleveland, Ohio, doing the closing keynote of the first day of Content Marketing World. And this is one of these strange stories where, like, I actually frantically had to call Mitch LaFon on the phone. Here's what happens. I get in Cleveland, Ohio, check into the hotel, walking to get my badge to the conference, and I hear somebody say that tonight they're going to see AC/DC. And I'm like, what? And I sort of stopped them and go, sorry, here in Cleveland? They're like, yeah. Apparently, this was one of the makeup dates that they had to do. It was not a stadium show. It was actually moved to the Quicken Loans Arena. So that's the sort of basketball, or if you're in Canada, hockey-size arena. Axel, of course, from GNR, back with AC/DC, non-broken leg. And I sort of frantically went on StubHub, didn't see any great tickets, texted Mitch, called Mitch, nothing could be done. And then by I don't know what, the graces of whomever, there was one seat on Ticketmaster that was just prime and pumped. And if you follow me on Facebook, you'll see some pretty interesting live videos and pictures that I posted. But I will tell you this, and I don't know, Mark, if you caught the show or not.
Not yet. I go on Wednesday.
Awesome. I gotta say, I Mitch LaFon keeps joking that I have to eat crow in everything I say about Axl Rose, and this is definitely me falling on the sword, on my knees, full brunt, face in mud. Incredible show. I'll tell you a couple things that were great. You know, one is, like I said, getting to see them in an arena with Axl without a broken leg, with AC/DC, just felt to me like a moment in time that not many people will get to experience. So that was one thing. But I was really skeptical of Axl because I'd seen a bunch of videos. And I'd seen that, 3-4 songs in, gets a little pitchy, gets a little sort of mic to the crowd, maybe sort of doesn't go for all the high notes. This show was insane, and Axl killed it. I mean, he did not go anywhere but exactly where the high notes called to go, carried it through the whole show to the point where even at the end was doing sort of off-kilter crazy screams. And I'll tell you, what was most amazing about this show for me is that it was a regular arena show, and I just figured this is going to be your standard 11 p.m. curfew going on. And I had to leave at 11:45, and there were still about 3 or 4 songs left, according to Setlist FM. It was just – I mean, they kept going and playing and going and playing, wow. And it really was – a fantastic show.
What time did they start?
they were pretty tight. I mean, I had heard a start time of around 9 p.m. There was an opening band, and they went on, you know, shortly thereafter. It wasn't that bad at all. And, you know, all guns blazing. The band sounded amazing. Axl sounded incredible. I have my own full version of Back in Black that I haven't posted on Facebook, but I'll try and sort of get it up maybe on YouTube, because it just, I want people to really see what this is. A couple of the videos, I remember, Mark, you were speaking earlier about Angus is playing on a couple of songs, right? Particularly there's some video of Thunderstruck, and you feel that a little bit. But when he's not forced to play fast, and he's in that sort of bluesy, his own feel of solo, you would think he's 19 still. It's unbelievable. Wow. To watch and see. Unbelievable show.
Wow. Well, I can't wait. I'm going on Wednesday for their makeup show at Madison Square Garden, so can't wait.
And that's also an arena show that you've got.
Yeah, which was originally scheduled at Madison Square Garden in April. I have the tickets right here in front of me. But
so am I wrong? Was this not a stadium tour?
I think you are wrong. I'm not 100% sure on Cleveland, but I'm pulling out my tickets right now. Yeah.
Let me jump in on that, because the answer is
April
yes
4th.
And no.
Yeah.
The first leg that they did last year that came to the Olympic Stadium in Montreal was let's do the stadium things. And then this was a second leg which had moved into the arenas in North America. In Europe, correct, it was still doing stadiums. And so these are the makeup dates of the second leg of the arena dates. So it's both a stadium tour and an arena tour, if that sort of all made sense right there.
Yeah, but if I had to... guess what you saw, Mitch, in Cleveland, I would think that probably was originally scheduled for an arena, because
okay, right,
stadium tour they
it was
did,
a second leg.
Yeah, I saw the stadium tour at MetLife, the same place we just saw Guns N' Roses, and that was awesome, and I'm guessing sold out. And then they came back around and did an arena tour, which then they bailed on, you know, because of Brian Johnson.
So the show that you saw, Mitch, in Montreal, the Olympic Stadium, that was with Brian Johnson.
I actually didn't get to go to it for whatever reason, but it was a Brian Johnson show, absolutely.
Great set list. I'm not going to blow it all for you, Mark, in terms of what goes where, but everything from You Shook Me All Night Long to TNT to A Whole Lot of Rosie to Highway to Hell to Back in Black to a whole bunch of surprises too. Great set list, great energy the whole way through. You are going to have an incredible night.
Good. Can't wait. My babysitter has to leave at midnight, though. So if they're still playing, yeah, I don't know if I can. But
send your wife home in a taxi. But
yeah,
I was disappointed when I went on to Setlist FM and saw what I missed. So you might want to pack the babysitter for a little bit later on that one, for
all right.
Sure.
All right. Very good.
Here's the question, though. What's the future of AC/DC now? Do they do some more shows later on with Axl? Do they get Brian back? Or is it just like, hey, you know what? We're done. Like, where do you see it going?
Me?
Either one of you.
Yeah, Mark, you start.
Yeah, I think they're in a strange position now, because, you know, Cliff Williams has come out and said he's done after this run of makeup shows with Axl, and basically at that point it's just Angus now. I think Angus has said that he's not sure what he's gonna keep doing. I'm pretty sure that's what he said, and I think it's probably over. That's my gut. Initially, I was thinking they would. I think it's tough. I'd love to see a studio record with Axl. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, there you go.
I think it would be an anomaly, a little freaky, a little strange. But for me personally, yeah, I'd love to see that. That would be great. Yeah. Bring in somebody good to produce it too. Like, I feel like the last couple records by AC/DC for me personally have not been amazing. They've just been kind of good, and yeah, like They sound like kind of AC/DC, but they just don't have that fire that some of the early Brian Johnson stuff and all the Bon Scott stuff had. I would love to see him bring in some sort of good producer who can help him go back to that just raw sound and do one more record with Axl. That'd be great. I'd love that.
Yeah, I think pushing it further, they're in a really precarious situation. It's both great. You know, Chris Slade was brought in as a drummer because all the issues they had with He Who Shall Remain Nameless, because he's basically criminal issues going on there. And yeah, it just sounds like it's Angus. You know, Mark's going to go in the direction of studio album. I would love to see some sort of like Vegas thing where Angus brings in a bunch of real killer singers and goes at it with like a whole sort of like almost a tribute to the music of. And then again, wishful thinking would be that Brian somehow manages to reconcile with Angus and something can be reconciled and pulled together. And I'd be into that too. I thought that Brian was doing a bang up job up until everything seemed to implode.
Right. Definitely.
Mitch, well, what do you want to have happen?
Oh, easy. A live album of some kind or a live DVD package of what just went on.
With Axl, and I agree.
With Axl, absolutely. Because he killed those songs. To have Back in Black with Axl's voice in my record collection would be absolutely stunning. And then, listen, a new album with Axl. It's nice to have Brian there and stuff. I have nothing against Brian, but I think the future for AC/DC lies with Axl. And I know that sounds strange to say, but I think it created an excitement not seen in rock in many, many years. And I think it should go on for 3 or 4 years. It shouldn't just be sort of this one and done summer kind of thing. It should be, you know, 2020, the farewell tour with Axl and, you know, whoever on bass. If Tommy Stinson can come and play bass, I don't care. Let's just keep it going.
I'll tell you an interesting story, too, that happened at this show that I'm not sure I captured, but I'm going to sort of parlay against the person who told me the story. But good buddy of mine is Jason Miller. You can check out his photography. I think it's Rock and Roll Cocktail. He's an amazing concert photographer. Also happens to be in a similar world as I am. He's a very senior guy at LinkedIn, believe it or not. He literally jumps into shows and shoots shows, and he shot that show. And he told me, I didn't see this. He said that people were booing Axl. And then Axl sort of went out on the elongated stage and sort of like put his hand out like, this is my arena, like I'm going to do this. And obviously Axl totally killed it that night and was great. Or he had said something to Angus like, they're not booing you, they're booing me. And he made a comment like that. So again, even when I posted this stuff on Facebook, you know, Mitch, you had shared some of it. You saw some of the vitriol that comes in. People really, there is a strong sentiment that this is a cover band and no longer AC/DC. So I don't know how this is going to sway.
I know how I want it to sway. So we'll see. Only time will know. Only time
Mark,
will tell.
Look for that, too, when you see the show. I'm curious to see how New York reacts to that and if there is any of that booing as well.
Right.
Look, while we're on the subject of GNR and arenas versus stadiums, GNR had a pretty insane run, apparently, with these stadiums. The numbers were really, really staggering. They generated, what was it, $100 million or over $100
million. $117 million.
Unbelievable. Over 1 million tickets sold. Which is really a staggering amount for any rock band. So this is basically what I'm leading to understand is about 25 concerts in 21 different stadiums. And the big news, and Mark, you had talked about this before we hopped on, was what happened at the MetLife Stadium, which is an amazing thing that they basically did something like close to $12 million just at the MetLife Stadium, two shows, over 100,000 fans in those two concerts. That's just unbelievable.
Which were in New Jersey, but of course were the New York shows. So you had people coming in from Long Island and New York City and all over New Jersey for those. Yeah, so I guess it's mind-boggling, but maybe not that surprising when you look at the big picture, you know.
Well, look, you know where I sit on this. I'm not only staggered that it made it out of the garage and out of the rehearsal studio onto the road like that. I mean, I saw that number and I just couldn't believe it. Mitch, you were going to say?
Well, it also stimulated back catalog sales, which is not accounted for in that $117 million. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but apparently Appetite and Chinese and all the back catalog shot up like 130% or something astronomical. So it made, you know, $117 on ticket sales, but I don't even know if that includes merch, and it certainly doesn't include back catalog stimulation. And overall, they must have easily made, who knows, 150, 200 with, if you factor in absolutely everything. So, you know, kudos to the guys.
Look, we've ranted about this so many times on so many episodes, even leading up to the rumors that this might happen, which is going back, you know, a long, long time now. And I wonder if you see a correlation between this number coming out and a tweet that's gone insanely viral, which is from Izzy Stradlin, former guitarist in the band, who, Mitch, why don't you, you have the exact tweet, you know what he said?
Yeah, well, I don't have the exact tweet in front of me, but I can look it up. But he basically said, I wasn't part of this because they didn't want to distribute the, dole out the money equally or something like that. Now, everybody, he didn't mention Guns N' Roses by name, but a lot of people did the 2+2 and came up with, ah, he's taking a shot at Guns. And, you know, listen, it's hard to say if he deserves a fifth. There's those that say, well, he wrote the songs, but he quit in 1991. There's got to be something about if you walk away, you don't get to come back and jump right back into the game at equal share. I mean, it's might be nasty to say, but that's how I feel about it.
I just wondered if the timing seems strange that tweet really came out right around the same time that the numbers were announced. Mark, did you happen to connect those little dots?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, he was sure he really did provide some great songwriting and was absolutely an important element, as all five of them were on that first record, and the Illusion records too, of course, but and Lies and all that. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know, something about the Izzy. I feel like he should have I know they most likely, it sounds like from his tweet that they offered him some money to come do some songs with them or whatever, and he turned it down. In my opinion, he should have taken what he could get and ran with it. You know,
yeah, just, because zero is a lot less than what he would have. Anyway, I have right. The tweet. It says, bullshit, they didn't want to split the loot equally. Simple as that, moving right along. Doesn't mention Guns N' Roses, but you got to think that that's what he was referring to.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can move right along when you see a number like $120 million.
Exactly.
Dollars. It can't be just the, you know, whatever, move along.
Well, here's the question. What would the tour have made? Because with Izzy on board, you know,
$117 million.
Okay, but here's the thing,
exactly.
And this is I always call this what I call the Who question, right? The Who question is, you have a band where it's basically Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey. It is impossible not to think of, obviously, Keith Moon passed away, but John Entwistle on the bass, you know, really important to the sound. But I do still believe that it is Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend. I believe that, and I'm a bass player, and I love John Entwistle. But the band always split it four ways. It's just how they operated.
Same with Van Halen back in the day.
Right. And so
the Police, same thing.
Yeah, so if you think about it, I actually don't think it's just GNR. I think it's almost every band. You always have one or two who are the ones who are more in the spotlight, and I think it's the function of the band that says, listen, we're still going to go at this as a band. Like, look at Maroon 5. You may not like the band, but just look at Adam Levine's star versus the others. He goes out, they go out as a band. As far as I know, it's split evenly. Now, you could go, well, Adam's a fool for doing that, or Adam's a really smart guy because he keeps his band together that way. I don't think there's a right or wrong in this scenario, so I don't think it's about would the tour have generated more if Izzy was on it. I think it's more a question of would the tour have been more interesting had it really been Steve Adler, Izzy Stradlin, Adlin, you know, whoever else is going to float in from those sort of earlier days. So again, I don't think it's just a question of earning more. I think it's a question of more of, is this still a reunion versus it being the GNR band with, you know, the addition of Slash?
It wasn't a reunion. I don't think Axl wanted it to be a reunion. They played four Chinese Democracy songs most nights. You know, it was like...
apparently this... Slash and Duff offered to do those, and Axl never asked, apparently.
Yeah, that's what Axl said in the interview, but...
Right.
Yeah, I think I don't know how Axel views this, but I think Axel views it as, my guess is he views it that this is Duff and Slash rejoining the band, you know, and some other little shakeups. You know, Pittman was out, and
well, it was,
you know,
dubbed
whatever,
the return of Guns N' Roses. Remember that it was called the return officially, not the reunion. But
right.
The other thing you have to look for also is the long term arc on this with Slash and Duff, and they're making the money. This probably could go on 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years. You bring in Steven and Izzy, who knows, it might have imploded before we got out of rehearsal. It might have imploded by May. Yes, it would have been more interesting, and yes, it would have been more of the real thing, and yes, it would have been a reunion, but it also might not have gone on. And if they're looking at playing into 2017, you know, Izzy and Steven might not have come along for the ride, and so they put all this effort into making something happen, and then it implodes. But with Slash and Duff and Frank and Richard, you know, for better or for worse, it's going to move forward until you decide we don't want it to move forward anymore. So there's also that to take into consideration.
And I got to say, after, again, seeing Axl with AC/DC, that lack of volatility and seeing the persistence of his voice and the power of it, I really do have a newfound energy and excitement over GNR. And even if they did a studio album, or you just said continued out, going out on tour, I don't think they're in that place of implosion, even because of what typically we would have seen as the volatility of Axl. Just doesn't seem to be there anymore. He just seems
right.
to be killing it.
Right, and they might have been if they had all original five guys, because some of the old wounds might have opened up. You don't know. So, you know, I think we got the three guys that make a huge difference to the live show. Izzy makes a huge difference in the studio with the songs. But, you know, I think we got the best that's available right now. And good for the band. Good for the $117 million they made, you know.
Last thought before we bail, because I know we're running a little long here, but I want to talk about what is looking like a serious and major upcoming Metallica tour. I got to say, when they launched Hardwired and loved the song and was watching the videos and releasing the book and all that stuff, I really thought this was going to be more of a fly-in tour, do a Thursday, a Saturday, Sunday, one here, one there. It looks like what we are seeing is Metallica's going to do like a hardcore massive tour again. Am I just wrong about that, or is that what's happening, Mark?
That's what it sounds like, and I tell you, I can't wait. I mean, the Guns thing was enormous for me. The Sabbath thing, I just saw them a couple weeks ago. Enormous. It's like I need something next year that's just gonna get me really, you know, worked up and excited. And that's it. It's Metallica. I definitely want to catch this tour numerous times. You know, like Mitch LaFon and I have spoken about the fact that they always mix up the set list is also awesome. I mean, Guns mix the set list up a little bit, but so many of these bands that we love, Kiss, Sabbath, Maiden, they just go out and they do the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Well, it's hard to change the tape that they're playing to some of those bands.
Right. Well, I don't know about Maiden. I don't think Maiden are, you know, Sabbath. I just saw them, and I'm, you know, Ozzy's voice in New Jersey was so freaking good, and we were right up front, and there's no way I was watching him, like every time his lips moved, there was no way it was a tape. There was no way. And
no, but there is a couple men behind the curtains there from what I've heard.
Yeah. Adam Wakeman, who has been on the show recently with us, he's really the only guy behind the curtain, I think, at this point, but might be wrong about that.
Super interesting. So we might as well now go into what we've been listening to and checking out. I'll start with you, Mitch. What have you been checking out?
Well, I'll tell you what. I have been checking out a CD called Live at the Rambling Man Fair. It is a concert that was put out in England earlier this year that featured Thin Lizzy, Thunder, Inglorious, and a whole bunch of other things. Over on Pledge Music, they made this triple CD, one song from every band, and it's raising money for a charity. And so it's just a great little package. And in the car, I've made a 40-song Van Halen playlist that has been keeping me entertained. So those are them for this week.
Amazing. Mitch, what are you checking out?
Mark.
Or Mark.
Sorry, Mark. Mark.
No worries. You know what surprised
me? We need a third Mitch. We really do. But yeah. Mark, are you willing to change your name legally to Mitch Striegel?
not yet. Maybe by episode 50. We'll see.
That would be great. Triple M. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Jackal. They have a new record out. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Roico is Roico? What Jesse told me.
Yeah. Roico. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it is, and no disrespect towards Jackal, but I think I'm interviewing Jesse in a couple weeks, and somebody sent me the record, and I checked it out, and I put it on, not expecting much, and wow, it's great. The songs have that blues, hard rock, metal thing going. His voice sounds fantastic. Really well-crafted songs. Some of the goofiness that we expect from Jackal, but also some of the just straight-ahead hard rocker songs, hard rock and blues songs. And it's a really fun listen.
Cool. I'm checking out local band Slaves on Dope. They are back with a brand new album called Horse. They have a new single out, which features which guy from Run DMC? Who's
Daryl McDaniels? And guess who set that up for Jason?
Yeah, our own little Mitch LaFon helped make the magic happen with our great album coming out really, really soon. Also, brand new album that I'm really liking is Of Mice and Men, Cold World. Big fan of the producer, David Bendith, who actually back in the day was the main A&R guy at BMG up here in Canada and a close friend of mine. So anytime he's working on an album, I sort of like check it out. And then here it comes out and it's doing absolutely amazing. To speak to your Van Halen little playlist, the other thing I'll recommend is hopping over to YouTube and doing a search for The Circle, which is Sammy Hagar's band. Yeah. Lots of live videos being featured up there. Their band features him, Jason Bonham on drums, Michael Anthony on bass, and I can't remember the other guitarist's name.
Exactly.
but you get to hear all the Van Halen classics, and they're pretty awesome, and it's a lot of fun to check out. So Slaves on Dope, The Circle on YouTube, and Of Mice and Men's brand new Cold World. As always, we love getting together and talking about metal. Mitch, who do you have coming up on your show?
Well, I've got Simone Simons from Epica, Monty Pittman, who has a new solo album, and also he is Madonna's guitarist, and a lot more coming up.
And what's happening on Talking Metal, Mark?
We had recently Adam Wakeman from Ozzy's band, which is a great interview, great guy. He actually got us backstage at Black Sabbath, which is a blast, so much fun at that show. But coming up, we have Randy Jackson from Zebra. We have Jeff Tate. We have John Corabi, all in the can, ready to go. And possibly Metal Church. That isn't recorded yet, but we'll see. But yeah, those three in the can, Corabi, Tate, and Randy Jackson.
And awesome. And if I may, I forgot one thing. Since we were speaking of Van Halen, I interviewed Mitch Malloy, who was technically the guy who replaced Sammy Hagar. At least they rehearsed together. They did a couple of songs, and he talks all about that. So that will be coming up as well. And I didn't give my opinion on Metallica. Yes, I see a full world tour coming up. So be ready, folks.
We're going to do multi gigs is the plan for sure. You can always find me at Mitch Stroll on Twitter. Or check out my podcast, other podcast, which is called Groove, the No Trouble Podcast, where I'm slowly trying to build the largest oral history of electric bass players. Latest episode is up now with Tim Lefebvre, who actually, really interesting enough, was the bass player who played on the last David Bowie album. So pretty amazing artist, pretty amazing. And I've got coming up Doug Wimbush, who's mostly known now for playing in Living Color, and Rudy Sarzo, who is Quiet Riot, Ozzy, nice. Whitesnake, on and on. So a little bit more of sort of more metal in that show, lots of jazz usually, but that's
yeah,
coming
the
up. That's
guy it. From Tower of Power, what was that guy's name that you interviewed?
A Weather Report.
Yeah, you a mean, Weather Report. Yeah, not Tower.
Yeah, Miroslav Vituos, who's a really fascinating guy as well, for sure. It's a lot of fun interview. To do that show. Yeah. So you can check that out at notrouble.com/podcast or groove. Mitch, let people know where they can find you.
At Mitch LaFon, MitchLaFon on Twitter, and one-on-one Mitch LaFon on Facebook. And please listen to the show on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio. One-on-one with Mitch LaFon, available everywhere for download.
And Mark?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I'm trying to get the Facebook presence going a little more and posting Mitch's show, my show, Metal Rap Show, all on the Talking Metal Digital Facebook page. I used to have like numerous Talking Metal Facebook pages, but they recently let me combine them all into one page. So it's facebook.com/talkingmetaldigital. Go give that a like.
Nice. We love it. All right. And we'll be back real soon with episode number 34 of Metal Raps.